Coming up on this week's Redcast.
Really, this is about just reducing the friction in the discussion with compliance. You know, this is about speeding up those decisions about what text goes on the presentation. And everyone's just sick and tired of it being so cumbersome and clunky to spend a week and a half to try to get something that should go out the next day.
Right, whether you have it on paper or as a PDF or as a machine executable rule or as a Gen AI model, that doesn't change, right? All those functions, and for a reason, they want to understand what has happened, when and how, right? And I think therefore, we're basically just seeing another transformation happening.
Humans or employees will not be replaced by AI or generative AI. They will be replaced by humans who know and understand how to use Gen AI. How can I get through this transformation with the help of, be it rule-based technology, rule engines, rec tech providers, be it generative AI or just AI or other models? All in all, it's about increasing the productivity and getting the user experience, be it internally for my employee or externally for my client, into the right shape.
There is no one prescribed path. It's about choosing the one that's right for you. And the great news is there's a lot of people on the same journey. So if you can leverage the lessons we learned and put into the paper, but then work out, okay, what does that mean for you? You can find other communities, other people facing that same problem.
Welcome to Redcast.
Redcast. Tomorrow's RegTech Radar today.
Hello, I'm PJ DiGiammarino, CEO and founder of JWG, and welcome to Redcast. This is season 3, episode 8, where we're focusing on today's AI-enabled embedded compliance. And we've really been looking forward to this Redcast for a while. In fact, probably since January. That's when we started this journey with the support of APX at EY to get out and start speaking to compliance professionals and operations folks about what was the state of the art of compliance and how they were thinking about adopting AI. So we've written this research paper in the course of the last 9 months, but it's probably one of the more difficult ones that I've ever been involved with. We've done dozens of them, but the ground has never shifted this much as we were writing a research paper. And I think that all gets back to the different perspectives people have had since Gen AI really came on the scene. So it's no longer an impossibility to think about how much technology can help compliance. It's really in the forefront. So there is a feature out there. It's about getting from all these texts to rule repositories and into the hands and controls of the business. And that has a lot of big implications, which we really pulled out in our paper called Embedded Compliance Unlocked. It takes you through a journey of what is the business imperative to figure out how to get that logic to the users. It talks about the risk management implications that it's going to mean for the third line of defense. And it really gets through this whole industry nut of what is open source going to mean. It's only a 25-page paper. I'm not going to walk you through it today, and I'm sure that we'll try to pull out some of the key themes, but I'm trying to entice you to go download it. It's free. It's on the APX website or the JWG website, and we'll get details at the end of the discussion or in the show notes. But without further ado, let's introduce the two other thought leaders on the paper. Why don't we start with Darko?
Thank you, PJ. Thanks for inviting and having me. Great pleasure to be part of this webcast. So my name is Darko Stefanowski. I'm based in Switzerland, and I'm leading the law team here in Switzerland, which is focusing on financial services, mostly regulatory compliance and legal issues. I'm with EY since more than 13 years, and since, I would say, 8 years plus, heavily focusing on how can law and technology be married, where law gets well out of such a divorce or symbiotic stance. So I'm very vocal voice in the market, which says technology is a must for every law, compliance, and regulatory professional.
Thank you. Ralph, no stranger to RegCast, but why don't you introduce yourself?
Happy to do so. Thanks a lot, BJ, for having me again. My name is Ralph. I'm one of the founders of APX, but having a background in law and having been through the whole journey probably of many regulatory colleagues out there, meaning being trained by the books and reading the papers and using the spreadsheets, because after my studies, I've been more than 15 years in the financial industry as a legal compliance person. So doing the additional aspect of compliance, right, in the financial industry organization, monitoring, training, controls, and all that kind of stuff. And then 7 years ago, with my fellow founder colleagues, we've started APX, right? And APX is trying to make compliance more efficient, right, by automating certain activities and certain checks, what we today call a better compliance. And therefore, very happy to have now also a foundation together with you colleagues here, right, which is the white paper, which is outlining on the one hand, what are the requirements to achieve a better compliance and what are most relevant use cases. So very happy to be here and discuss exactly those topics with you.
Well, thank you both. This is going to make a very interesting discussion at this point in the year. I guess that this is the time everybody plans. And when I really pushed up motives for these interviews, I really expect to hear lots about cost income ratios and how they need enough staff and they needed to automate to reduce the complexity, those kind of things. I didn't hear any of that. And instead, what I heard was really, this is about just reducing the friction in the discussion with compliance. You know, this is about speeding up those decisions about what text goes on the presentation. And everyone's just sick and tired of it being so cumbersome and clunky to spend a week and a half to try to get something that should go out the next day. And it was more of like a personal motive, I felt, at the end of the day. You know, people wanted to feel better about their jobs, more job satisfaction, you know, feeling like they'd actually been doing something that adding more value. In your perspective, what are the strongest embedded compliance use cases right now, Darko? Can you help us shed some light on that?
Yes, happy to. Straight away answer, cross-border. Let me tell you why. And now it gets macroeconomic. From my perspective and what we observe as an organization is that globalization is under threat. Right? What does that mean? The topic of geography is back and it matters where you are located. And cross-border is one of the topics where you get the threat from a compliance perspective, because you do still perform services and activities on a cross-border basis. However, the laws and regulations are national, and the globalization is coming back. So the interest in being a global player is going back here. And by having more and more a geography approach, where one country is giving rules which need to be complied with, even if you're in another jurisdiction and geography, that puts really cross-border, which is since many, many years, on the agenda of many compliance departments. But I think with the macroeconomic environment, which we are seeing actually, it gets back cross-border on the plate again. So why am I coming with an old topic as the most strongest use case today? It's because the enforcement of the respective geographies gets stricter and stricter again. This is why the potential compliance risk is increasing. And the use cases we have seen and work together also with APX and the respective financial institutions And talking also in the paper you mentioned at the beginning, the ones who were able to have this golden source of all the various geographies in one place, translating that into executable rules, into yes and no rules, that has increased the desire to speed up the decision-making process, including the decision-making process within compliance. So from a business process point of view, the results these organizations have achieved by digitizing, having the golden source, and making generic content applicable into a specific use case, they're faster, they're better, and they have less friction with the business, because business asks you a question, you give them an immediate answer, or you're even not needed because you're in a self-service setup where the business gets the answers on their own. So with the ones we were speaking, they're really satisfied because, as you mentioned, PJ, at the beginning, people want to do their work the most efficient way and focus on the things that makes them happy. So we see an increase on both ends, first, second, third line of defense. Compliance is much more happy on what they're doing because they deliver the right answers to business, which is the first line, which gets a satisfaction as well because they can focus on rendering the services. And therefore, in my eyes, this is really the biggest and most up-to-date use case we're seeing in the market.
So if I just summarize this in a simple value proposition framework, it's either quality, cost, or time. I think what I'm hearing is quality is a really big driver because of the complexity and the risk of getting it wrong.
Except.
Yeah. Okay. Ralph, what's your perspective?
I think I would add here, right, that what Darko has explained is, let's say, from a legal and compliance perspective, I would fully agree, right? I think that's one of the, let's call it, regulatory areas or compliance topics or compliance subjects, however you want to call this, right? Cross-border or marketing restrictions or product distribution restrictions, basically it's all the same, right? It's country-specific requirements. Fully agree, this is a hot topic. If you ask me about the use case, right, what I would always add to this is the concrete application to a business process, right? So I think that was Darko nicely explained the compliance angle to it. I think I would add what are the hottest use cases from a business point of view. I would say in the wealth management area, for sure, it's everything around relationship manager efficiency or client satisfaction and client customization, right? I think that's the business angle to it. And what does that mean, right? At the end, this is a relationship manager serving a client, discussing an investment proposal with the client, customizing the investment proposal in a negotiation or in a discussion, right? Where the client has ideas and preferences, and the bank has obviously investment views, and being able in such a very complex environment, right, where you have the setup, the license of the bank, the product restrictions, right, and being dynamically able to adjust what the bank is allowed to do and what not. I think this is one of the areas, or I would say probably the hottest use case in wealth management, right? And you can summarize this under the term suitability, for example. That's one way to name it, right? But at the end, it's making sure that the wealth manager, be it the relationship manager as a human being in the middle or directly the client in some cases where you have at least a hybrid or maybe a type of self-service approach, right? That the service offering and the product offering is compliant with all those jurisdictional geographic restrictions that Darko has mentioned. This is what I would see as the hottest wealth management use case. If I would look at asset managers, it's probably everything in the area of sales enablement or marketing automation, right? Where a lot of customization is happening if asset management sales colleagues or distribution teams are creating client presentations, marketing materials, or marketing campaigns, email campaigns. And again, right, I mean, it sounds so simple. You have your CRM tool, you have all the email addresses and your contacts and your prospects. You have a great product or an interesting strategy. Well, you want to inform all your prospects about that interesting new service or product. Well, just drop them an email with MailChimp or whatever it is. But your compliance colleagues would probably step in, right, and say, hey, country-specific restrictions, cross-border restrictions, marketing restrictions, however you call them. And you need to have this ready, right? And if it's, as in the old world, where I was still in legal compliance, then this is a handbook, it's a checklist, it's an email, it's a phone call with your compliance colleague. And obviously in the embedded compliance world, it's about exactly automating this check, right? Which allows you to immediately clarify or stop an email before it's being sent out, or automatically add a disclaimer to a marketing presentation before it's being sent to a client, right? So I think that's what I would add from a business angle, from a business process angle.
Yeah, so it is a revenue driver still, especially for wealth management, and the fact that it helps get more volume through the pipe, as it were, because you don't have all these manual checks in the way. But it's also really a cost aid as well, and that it keeps you from having to add all these additional resources to do it, as you say, the old way.
Absolutely, and I fully agree, right, with your statement at the beginning that actually very little is talked about or is taken care about the whole return on investment topic, right? It's not something that, at least in my experience, is coming naturally with regulatory folks, right? Maybe a bit more natural if you speak to COOs or the business colleagues. But yes, I think at the end, this is for me kind of the magic key to get things moving, right? So if you're in compliance, or if you're in legal, or in the COO area, right? I mean, if you want to change something and want to launch a transformation project, whatever it is, hopefully it's embedded compliance, but whatever it is, at the end, there must be a business impact, right? And you must be able to actually calculate why you should invest here. And very often that those calculations are actually turning out very impressive numbers, but you need to have that mindset, right? And I would say, I would agree, right? I think it's not yet a standard that in the compliance area, these discussions and these thoughts are being made, right? It's a little bit of the exception.
Yeah, and so while the investment in embedded compliance establishes a cap, a governor on the amount of resource that you need, it doesn't bring the resource down to nothing, right? And I think that's been one of the zeitgeist of Gen AI. It has led people to think, oh, I can just get rid of all these people and the computer can figure it out for me. I guess what's wrong with that? I mean, what is the thinking that you've been working through with your clients?
I think, first of all, right, we are in the regulated area here. Financial markets are densely, highly regulated. You have the three lines of defense model, you have the regulators, right? Everything needs to be tracked, audit trail, documented, track changes. I think we all know that, right? And I think that applies regardless of the technology, right? Whether you have it on paper or as a PDF or as a machine executable rule or as a Gen AI model, that doesn't change, right? All those functions, and for a reason, they want to understand what has happened, when and how, right? And I think therefore, we're basically just seeing another transformation happening, a super interesting transformation happening. But at the end, and I think that's what you want to hear, PJ, right? I think that the human involvement, in my view at least, right, that will not go away. And I think what we have now, I think the APX hat on, right, I think what we have been doing a lot in the past five, six years is what we would call today the rule-based approach, right? Really taking complex legal memos and creating binary rules out of these legal memos, right? With what we have discussed before, that's what you can achieve, right? Binary, yes or no. So there is a transformation work that takes a bit of time, but the interpretation is basically happening during this creation of a rule, or let's call it the transformation from text to yes and no statements. Now, with the Gen AI approach, I mean, we've all seen it, right? I would say most of the listeners, they have tested ChatGPT, right? And have seen tools that can extract incredibly well information from free text, right? And so that's amazing. So you would ask now, but why, right? Why would you create the rule? You just upload the documents, you get a great feedback immediately. But I think probably most listeners know, right? You guys for sure know, the time, if you work with the Gen AI models, you invest then not in this transformation from text into rule, but in actually reviewing the model, training the model, and also reviewing whether the answers provided are correct, right? So I would say, while this is a super powerful technology, but there will be a legal and compliance element involved. And I think it's not one approach is the right one and the other is the wrong one. I think there are different use cases for those approaches. But for all approaches, right, this review and this interpretation will remain and is important and will have to happen, right? It's just on a different, let's say, in a different stage. If you're in a rule-based model building the rule repository, you invest before the rule is final. And in the Gen AI approach, you basically monitor the behavior and train the model to become better and better. And both involves human resources, which are trained and are regulatory experts.
I think that's the basis of the statement, I believe, is true. Humans or employees will not be replaced by AI or generative AI. They will be replaced by humans who know and understand how to use Gen AI, including the training that you were just mentioning. So it's going to become more and more important to know how to prompt the machine and the rules in order to get the right answer in the right context. And I think this is a bit of a game changer beside the productivity, which you can increase, because at the fingertip, you get a lot of information, but you will need the know-how in order to assess whether what you got as an answer is valid or not. I mean, example from last Monday, my son is 8 years old, third grade, mathematics homework. Tell me how many times does the digit 8 appear between 800 and 900? He told me, I Googled it, Dad, and there is no answer in the internet. I said, you shouldn't use the web for that. You should think about it. And then he said, can you ask this ChatGPT? He knows it for sure. And I knew the answer already. I have a mathematics background from the middle education. So it's 120 times. It's the first, the second digit, and the third digit, which appears 10 times, 10 times, and 100 times. I asked ChatGPT, the answer was 20. Then I prompted differently, tell me how many and which are the ones. There was just a selective source on that. I told ChatGPT, your answer is wrong. ChatGPT said, I apologize for the wrong answer and thank you for correcting me. My answer is 40. Still wrong. Tell me the numbers. Complete wrong numbers. The lesson for my son is don't trust what you have in the internet and including ChatGPT. You should think yourself about these things. But that shows what you said, Ralph, that there will be always the human around that needs to train them all and also supervise it. Because if you don't have the knowledge, you would just put in it's 20 times digit 8 appears between 800 and 900, then you will get a bad mark in school.
And Darko, do you think, given what you've seen about more constrained models in the training that you can provide, the structure and the rules and the governance around how these models behave, do you think it's possible for them to do better?
Definitely, definitely. And I think we should also enlarge the discussion. I mean, now we're talking about embedded compliance, but think about risk management by design, which means you embed controls across the life cycle of your large language model or the development of it. So you need to also apply, and I think here the financial institutions are, I think, advanced to other industries because they are already heavy regulated. They know the three lines of defense model. They have an understanding of compliance, risk management, and respective risk control. So they are used to apply this knowledge also on LLM models, on generative AI. So when you design the solution, you need to obtain reliable data which has been reviewed and validated, because bad data in, bad data out. You can use any technology. It doesn't make it better than the training which is required. Then you have to check the answers, as I have done it with this mathematical task. Does the model perform well? Does it really solve the problem? Then you evaluate, right, the performance of the model, you make corrections, and then you have to decide who is approving the model. When do we put it into a UAT environment? When does it go into production? Who is doing the monitoring? What kind of controls to embed? And with all that, it will get better and better, and we will then end up really with a amazing Gen AI use cases, which are also helping in delivering services to end clients, helping employees to get more productive and more efficient. And with that, of course, you reduce the cost and increase the margin on your business.
So that's really what should be on senior management radars for next year. Are you seeing your clients start making moves to get beyond the innovation labs and out into the lines of business to start applying some of these models?
Definitely. And I think what everybody's mentioning is two things, technology and people. And now the question is, how do you bring that together? Financial industry is in transformation for years, right? Regulatory wave, digitization wave, etc. But all in all, it's about how to bring together technology and people. And people is a twofold aspect. It's one internally, my employees. What is my employee experience? The EX, how I call it. And then you have also the clients, because the financial services industry is heavily focusing on clients. So what is the client experience they're getting? And that's really on the attention of senior management. How can I get through this transformation with the help of, be it rule-based technology, rule engines, rec tech providers, be it generative AI or just AI or other models? All in all, it's about increasing the productivity and getting the user experience, be it internally for my employee or externally for my client, into the right shape. And when we apply this to the use case of how can I use Gen AI in the cross-border or compliance context, we see that all the different departments need to work together. So IT, business, compliance, they need to prioritize the embedment of compliance, controls, risk management, because when you look at it from the different angles, because the data that goes in from a cross-border perspective or the compliance rules, they come mostly from legal. So they validate this is the right source. Business gives you the context where you need these laws and regulations. So law and business interact to find the context and how to apply in a context laws and regulations. That shouldn't be a Sisyphus work. Do it day on day. And what you have done a year ago, the same question pops up after 1 or 2 years. Once you have defined for a scenario, this is the answer, that should be locked in, and then everybody can source of it. And that's a bit the collective know-how, the whole idea of generative AI models, right? And this is why they need to speak all the same language, and they need to define the project scope and then implement into systems, generate new systems. And whether we are in a fundamental technology or infrastructure change, I don't know, might be, but many of the systems that the banks are using, and I mean, a bank is in essence an IT company because they rely heavily on the technology in bookkeeping of the assets of the clients, and how long these systems will survive because they are at a certain age, that's a big question mark. And this is why technology is on the radar, I think, of every senior, they should really also look on it. And Gen AI is a nice topic, whether it is a hype now or not, where you can really put the face into this struggle, which we see for years in the industry.
Yeah, and I guess technology company or not, it whoever is delivering a financial service, to your point earlier, there's so many different rules to apply. It's a question of the know-how about how to do that, I think, is where Ralph was leading in the beginning. So Ralph, come bring us back full circle now, finish this off. What in your perspective is most critical for senior managers next year?
I think, the push we are seeing is coming from two sides, right? I think one side is, let's say, the technology and IT part, where obviously generative AI and the owners of the technology, right, which coincidentally also offer cloud services and many other interesting solutions, right, I think they're pushing that technology heavily. So from an IT operation side, there is actually in some organizations a search for use cases, right? So we have budget, we want to do something Gen AI, we need to be with that movement, we want to be with it, but what are we going to do, right? So this is one angle where we see a lot of traction and budget available, right, which is super interesting. And the other angle is what you've mentioned before, or also basically the use cases that I've mentioned, right? So I think digitization in the client-facing area, being it CRM tools, sales enablement tools, wealth advisory tools, and similar stuff, this is happening still, right? That transformation is not over yet. Banks are still investing. And as you have explained it rightly, PJ, I think more and more organizations realize that the rules are too complex to also put them into the CRM, right? You want to have a more modular approach. You want to have a service-based IT architecture where the CRM system is here, the product data is there, and regulatory data at the end, or you can call it the rule repository, however you want to call it, at the end is also a data source, and it should be treated that well. It needs to be like a dedicated platform. Someone needs to be responsible for it. And we see really banks finally going into that direction, understanding the need for it, because the CRM tool is only as good as the underlying data. And that applies to everything, right? To the client data, to the product data, but also to the regulatory data, right? If that information is not good, not up to date or wrong, you can have the best business tool, but it's worthless, right? And I think that we really see happening. Banks do understand and are investing. And I think that's what we see on the agenda of 2022.
Well, thank you both for that summary. I think it's excellently, it has contextualized the many different ways you think about coming at the problem. I guess my perspective, and having spoken to now all the compliance folks, as well as spent a lot of time with the reporting folks and the operational folks and the ESG and the data folks, is it's all coming back to the same thing. Whichever route you take, it's about that rule repository you mentioned, and then straightening out your data and the decision-making required. And that's ultimately what this conversation is all about. There is no one prescribed path. It's about choosing the one that's right for you. And the great news is there's a lot of people on the same journey. So if you can leverage the lessons we learned and put into the paper, but then work out, okay, what does that mean for you? You can find other communities, other people facing that same problem, and come up with these benchmarks and reference points that can get you moving in the right way. And better, faster, cheaper, and safer with open source. So without further ado, I'd like to just remind people they can get the paper off the JWG website, jwg-it.eu, or the APX website, which is, Ralph?
Well, apx.com, and it's a banner on the top page. You cannot miss it.
Perfect. So I will also put a link to the show notes. Thank you very much for following us and liking us if you are able to do so, because that helps other people find us. We will have a lot more in store. Our 7th of February annual conference is just around the corner, physically in London, but virtually here on Redcast and through a bunch of other channels that you'll find soon. Thanks very much for your time, gentlemen.
You can download the podcast via Spotify, Apple, and Google, but also I'd encourage people to come to the JWG website, which, as hopefully you will know, is jwg-it.eu. Go to the Intelligence Hub and create your bespoke library.
This is Redcast.
Tomorrow's RegTech Radar today.